Welcome, everybody, to the Stoned On Sports Podcast. My name is Matt. Really happy to be here with you on this Thursday night. We are going to dive into a little more baseball today. I know we started on it on Tuesday, but we've also got some NFL news and notes, and we've got super wild card weekend right around the corner. That's right. We're going to be watching playoff football in less than 48 hours. Before we jump into all of that, I do want to give a big thank you to everybody that comes and hangs out with us in the chat and everybody that consumes our content. We really, really appreciate it, and you make it a lot of fun. As always, I'm joined here by Kyle. We had a surprising yet unsurprising parting of ways today in New England, the end of an era, and it's funny. One of the people that I work with today sent me this meme with both Bill Belichick and Nick Saban retiring seemingly within minutes of one another. It's like that couple that was together for 75 years. One dies and then the other dies like the very next day.
That's a nice analogy. I like it very much. Yeah, it was. The Saban thing was quite a shocker, but I thought Vrabel and Pete Carroll leaving was a shock as well. And I knew the Belichick thing was going to happen. They were going to dissolve that amicably, and it appears that they did, at least in public. I'm very curious who you think is going to New England.
I think, you know, and word around the campfire is it's going to be Vrabel. You know, he spent a lot of time there, had some success there. Personally, I'd like to see them go with more of an offensive coach, just because that's what you need in today's NFL. Yes, you need defense, but you aren't going to win anything if you don't put any points on the board.
Yeah. The actual betting favorite for Bill Belichick is to not coach a head team, head coach a team next year. So it'd be interesting if he takes a year off and vacations and relaxes, or if he gets right back at it. I know he wants to, but
sure. But I mean, when you look at the openings, is there really anything that's that appealing? There's some talent in Atlanta. But no, I guess Washington has come out and said they're not interested. I can't really see him going to the West Coast. He does not seem like a West Coast kind of guy to me at all. So I imagine he'll stick in somewhere in the East. You know, Carolina's got an opening, but I cannot envision Bill Belichick and David Tepper coexisting in any kind of meaningful and productive way. So we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of talk about Jerod Mayo. On staff there, been there for a while, was a player there for, I don't know, eight seasons, I think, or so. But they could take a look at him too. So it'll be interesting to see. A lot of good vacancies available. San Diego, of course, does look great. Obviously, we know Staley got fired a couple weeks ago. And then, yeah, Ron Rivera's out, Rabel's out, Belichick is out, and Pete Carroll. Is all of them.
Yep. Art Smith.
Oh, yeah. And Art Smith this week, too. Yeah. Fuck. Oops. Fudge that guy. I mean.
Yeah, whatever. Dubo, don't mind. We see you there in the chat, brother. How you doing? Yeah. Appreciate you coming to hang out with us tonight. Yeah. I got to imagine being up there in Minnesota, you've either already gotten some snow or you've got some on the way with this storm that's coming through. Down here in Indy is going to be rain and wind. I'm a little disappointed. I was, you know, really hoping for a foot and a half of snow, but piss on my hopes, apparently.
The local meteorologist here in mid-Michigan is saying at 7 p.m. tomorrow, we could be at an inch per hour. And I'm like, nice. I'm hibernating this weekend. Make a big pot of soup. Watch some great playoff football. I can't wait. Sports betting. My favorite sports bet this week that I love in the games is the over in the Texans Browns game. It's set at 44.5 on DraftKings. I just really think that's going to go over with the way that those two quarterbacks sling the ball. Of course, I lost my spot, or I was.
That shit ain't going over if Joe Flacco doesn't stop throwing interceptions, period.
Well, and in his five starts, the games, the totals have averaged 53 in his starts so far. He pushes the ball down. We know what CJ Stroud loves to do as well. They played a game earlier, Christmas Eve or whatever. That was 58 points. I don't expect it to reach that, but I definitely expect it to get over 44 and a half.
Sure. Yeah, if I was going to make a bet on that game, I think I'd lay the 2 points with the Browns. I think they are going to come out on top, and we kind of touched on that a little bit earlier in the week. My favorite bet, a little mirroring yours, I'm going to take the over, but I'm going to take the over in the Rams and Lions game.
Sure.
Just the way that Matthew Stafford has been playing this season, they've got Kupp and Nacua and Kyren Williams, who's been absolutely fantastic since coming back from injury. The Lions secondary is one that can be targeted frequently and with some success, especially with that wide receiver duo and Matthew Stafford pulling the trigger. Taking a look at practice reports from today, we got James Houston. He's designated to return from IR. He's been a full participant yesterday and today. Sam Laporta, that's still up in the air. I'm not going to hold my breath with him playing. I can't see it. Maybe we get lucky and he plays next week, but he's been DNP both days. Khalif Raymond's been DNP yesterday and today. He's not a huge part of the offense, but he is somebody who can make some big plays, both for catching the ball and in the return game when he's used there. James Mitchell was limited today with a hand. You know, Detroit, they're not going in fully healthy. Jerry Jacobs, he went DNP today, and I'm just fine with that. Keep his ass on the sidelines. That way he can't really do any damage.
Right. Well, yeah. We'll talk about the Lions here in a minute when we get into the preview here in 40 minutes or something, some more here. So that's it for news and notes on that. Lots of fired coaches, lots of places to go, lots of attractive openings, lots of less attractive openings. So. Now we're going to get into our second half studs for Major League Baseball from last season. We got five batters and five pitchers that we're choosing to talk about here. Most of them improved, or all of them improved, from the first half to the second half. And we wanted to pick a few of those and talk about them a little more, see if that will carry over into this season. Or this next season here coming up in April. So, first one is, who we got? Matt Olson.
Right? Matt Olson. Yes, sir.
First baseman for the Atlanta Braves. I thought, you know, all those years in Oakland, I knew that there was more in the tank for him. I thought it might take a year, meaning this year possibly, just because of the Freddie Freeman shadow, having to get used to a new offense and everything like that, a new offensive approach. I really thought it would take a year to unlock that talent. I was wrong. you just can't imagine what he did last season. 54 homers was a franchise record for that team, for his team there in Atlanta. Posting a 6.7 WAR. A great season, finished fourth in MVP. You know, he anchored the best lineup in baseball with Acuna, the best offense in baseball, and, you know, really, I thought the best team in baseball. I was shocked that he played so well that first season there.
Yeah, he's somebody who's really underrated, and it seems like a lot of players who leave Oakland really find themselves thrust into the spotlight, and part of it is just the park there in Oakland. There's so much foul territory there. Mm-hmm. And going down to I believe it's called Truist Park now down there in Atlanta, especially in the summer, you get those hot, humid nights and the ball just flies out of there. He had 26 home runs in the second half, you know, from July 1st onward. That was first in baseball. He was second in baseball with 72 RBIs. He accumulated 348 and a half points in the second half. Now, this is going by CBS standard scoring. Your league may vary a little bit, but this is to give you a rough idea. He had a 315 ISO, and baseball is a really stat-driven game. If you're unfamiliar with ISO, that's a measure of raw power. It only incorporates extra base hits. So, for example, if somebody goes 1-for-5 with a double, that's a 0.20 ISO. Average is 0.14. So you can see he's, you know, twice as good as the average player. Really, in the second half of the year, he cut his strikeouts in half. He had fantastic plate discipline in August and September. He had 3 more strikeouts than walks.
Yeah. You hit 54 homers. That's awesome. He averaged 94 miles an hour exit velocity on every single ball you hit, that he hit. I think that that's just ridiculous.
Man, he's beating the ball like it owes him money.
Right. Yep. I mean, his season can be summed up in 3 words: very loud contact, continued to show elite plate discipline, finished in the 95th percentile on walk rate, just punished anything that came through the heart of the plate.
Yeah, he did. And I was fortunate enough to swing a trade for him in my league. And I know those of you out there don't give 2 shits about my league and in my team.
Right.
But still, he was somebody I identified in the preseason as an opportunity to, I don't necessarily want to call it a breakout, because he was a fairly successful player when he was with Oakland. But just when you put him in that lineup, I think the Braves lineup is really the only one going into this season that can kind of rival the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. You know, top to bottom, you've got Acuna and Albies and Matt Olson and Austin Riley and on down the list. You know, top to bottom, that's one of the best lineups in baseball, and he's right there in the heart of it.
Right. Unfortunately, you know, most of those guys, you know, didn't do dick in the NLDS. Olson was just 4 singles and a walk in 4 games. So ugly. All right. You just mentioned Austin Riley, his teammate, third baseman for the Atlanta Braves. I guess he did have kind of a down year by his standards with the bat. But I think he had one of the best performances of his career. He led all primary third basemen in Major League Baseball with a 5.2 WAR, edging out Jose Ramirez by 5.1. The next closest third baseman was, I can't even talk today. To put that in perspective, the third baseman in general, 10th place was Eugenio Suarez at 3.2 WAR. So just amazing, guy is good. He gets kind of overshadowed there, I think, when you're having, you know, Acuna and the previous mentioned Olson having pretty great seasons last year. But Austin Riley was very good. And on a non-fantasy deal, base running and defense, very good as well.
No, absolutely. His first half wasn't awful. He got off to a slow-ish start, we'll call it. But his bat came alive in the second half, 22 home runs, 54 RBIs. He had more home runs, RBIs. His batting average was 35 points higher. His on-base percentage was 40 points higher. His OPS was 200 points higher in the second half than the first half. And look, you get to the dog days of summer, you get to August, you get to September. Baseball is a very long season, 162 games in 6 months, and to be able to put up those kind of numbers and to be able to improve that much speaks volume, not only to the level of talent that he has, but to the coaching and them being patient enough to understand that, hey, the talent is there. He's done it for a couple seasons now. There was never any talk of setting him down or anything like that. And he rewarded that team with a fantastic second half.
He did.
286 fantasy points.
Yeah. He total in the season, he had 328 total bases. That was a career high for him. That was actually 3 higher than when he led the league in 2022.
Man. He's just kind of coming into his prime too. So there's room for growth in those numbers.
There is. Defensively, he's had some issues. We'll see. Defensive metrics are relatively new. That's a conversation for another time, but let's see.
But in fantasy, we don't give 2 shits about defense.
Right. If you'd like to introduce the next one, that's fine.
Sure thing. Let me pull up the deal here.
Forgot we were going to rotate.
All good, brother. So your namesake, Cal Tucker of the Houston Trash Cans.
Right.
He was fourth in points. He had 336 last year in the second half. He averaged 4.4 per game, scored 57 runs, had 81 hits. He was fifth in baseball with 63 RBIs. He had 16 stolen bases, too. In July and August, he actually had one more walk than strikeout, which it may not seem like a huge deal, but for a lot of hitters, that's unheard of, especially somebody like him who is a run producer, who has a lot of power. His slugging and OPS were both roughly 100 points higher in the second half. He had a 292 ISO. He had, what did he have, three triples? All five of them came in September.
Heck yeah. He's a fine player. The stat I liked to him that he most improved on was his isolated power. You mentioned that stat earlier. Measures the raw power of a hitter by taking, you know, only extra base hits into account. Was 1.183 in the first half and rose that all the way to 299 in the second half of the season. Just impressive. He's a fine player too. Just plays for a team I don't care for at all. If they disappeared from the league, I'd be okay with it.
I can dig it. We got Captain Spock in the house. They call him the Detroit Lions because they got the biggest balls in the league. That's right, brother. A great big old swinging pair.
Yep, right hanging between Dan Campbell's legs. Go big or go home. No risk it, no biscuit. Do what you got to do.
But that's it. Just all the cliches.
All of them. All of them. All right. Next guy, Bobby Witt Jr. Had a hell of a season for the Kansas City Royals, even if the franchise didn't do anything. They did a lot this offseason, though. He's just 23 years old. They took him second back in 2019. They thought that he could become a cornerstone for them, and I think he showed last season that he definitely did. He finished 5.7 in WAR, good for 11th in all of baseball. Defensively, he was amazing too. Finished the year with 14 outs above average. That was tied for 11th in baseball. And the boy can hit fastballs. He's a heater killer. 2022, he hit 239. Last year, 295. And he doesn't walk much. Not at all. 5.8% walk rate, was 16th percentile in baseball. He's always kind of been that way in his career so far. Boy gets on base. 742 OPS in the first half. Second half, that rose that to 906. Excellent season last year.
Yeah, it is. Captain Spock, 420 there in Cali. He's taking his break right there with you, brother. We appreciate you stopping by. I was actually telling the wife about your little trick to dissolve a little bit into the coffee just to get that perfect start to the day.
Yeah, I could see that working definitely with like a chocolate type of edible. You know, sometimes I like a hot chocolate and coffee, like a 50-50 or something. I see that that would be delicious and relaxing.
For sure. Look, some Bobby Witt, he was fifth in points in the second half, 334 points. He had seven triples, which was first in all of baseball. August was his best month. He had highs in doubles, home runs, RBI, on-base percentage, slugging, OPS, and he actually struck out the fewest times in August. Yeah. He was a very, very highly regarded prospect, just like you were talking about there, and he's somebody who, you know, as he grows and matures and kind of fills out and bulks up a little bit, there's 30-30 upside there for him.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. Definitely. Yeah, you mentioned the strikeouts in August. First half, 80 strikeouts. Second half, 41. Almost cut it in half. Just amazing play discipline.
Hell yeah, it is. So who we got? Who's the last one left? CJ Abrams. Mm-hmm. There he is. So CJ Abrams, he came over from the Padres as part of the Juan Soto trade, an incredibly highly regarded prospect. And the thing with baseball, you know, you look at football and in the draft coming up this year, you've got Marvin Harrison Jr. You know, as soon as he steps on the field, he's going to be an elite playmaker. Baseball is such a difficult sport. Hitting a pitched baseball with a round bat in the major leagues is the most difficult thing there is. He was 11th in baseball in points. He averaged 3.8 a game. He had 38 stolen bases in the second half, which was first in baseball. He's not going to hit for a lot of power. He's not going to drive in runs. He doesn't have a high OPS right now. His value comes from those stolen bases. And just depending on your league's scoring, that could be a pretty big boost. I'm taking a look here at CBS's default scoring, and let me just pull this up real quick. Stolen bases are worth 2 points. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot in a vacuum, but when you consider a hit is worth one, a double is worth one, when you can get whatever the hell 38 times two is, I'm not the greatest at math and never claimed 16. What the hell is that, 76? 76 points just from that. I mean, you're going to take it. Washington is a younger team, but they've got some up and coming players there, and he's really the centerpiece of their rebuild.
Yeah. His season can really be broken into two parts: before he was in the leadoff position and after he was moved into the leadoff position. The first 63 games, he hit a slash line of 215, 259, and 365 with 8 walks and only the 6 stolen bases. Over the final 88 games, leading off, 265, 325, 442 slash line with 24 walks and a whopping 41 steals. He was only caught twice. He finished 47 of 51, breaking Trey Turner's single season club record. The guy showed some impressive athleticism on the base paths this past season.
Yeah,
he's somebody I am going to be targeting to try and get on my team.
Yeah. And given his second half performance, I think he's another dude who, as we get closer to draft time, there's going to be some helium pushing him up the board. But just depending on when your draft is, you may be able to get a little bit of value on him.
You might.
So we got all the chat blowing up here.
Do we?
Dubo and Spock talking about playing fantasy baseball.
Dubo tried it. Yeah, season-long leagues must be weird, Spock. That can be the daily moves one. The daily, that's a grind. It is. The one league I'm in is just weekly moves. You set your lineup before the first pitch of any game on Monday, I believe. And, you know, you roll with what you roll with. Somebody gets hurt, you're just kind of bumming. But it can be still fun and not take up a ton of your time. I still would check through every, you know, couple days for waivers or something like that. Some guys that you could pick up, some injuries that might happen, some guys that might get called up. But it doesn't have to be the commitment that some folks do. But daily moves leagues is rough.
Oh, for sure. And when we put together our listener league, it's going to be a weekly moves league because we understand that, you know, there's a few of you who either haven't played in a while or have never played before. And with a daily moves league, I could easily envision some folks dipping out after 45 days because it's just too much. With a weekly moves league, it makes it an easier transition from fantasy baseball.
It does. And that's what we're going to go with this spring. Is a weekly move podcast league that you guys can join. I know a lot of you guys have expressed interest already, so I'm really excited about doing that. And, you know, we'll draft mid-March or something. I don't like doing early drafts. That way we're ready for the season to begin on, was it 28th, 29th, I think, this year of March? Yeah,
something like that. So close enough.
All right, hitters are done. We're going to start with pitchers. First one we got is Houston Astros right-handed pitcher Justin Verlander. We know him pretty well with his time with the Tigers. Like him, I still like him very much, even though he was there for the cheat World Series. But had a 3.3 total WAR between the Mets and the Astros. He was traded there mid-season trade deadline. but did well. It's like he wasn't even really gone. He had 11 starts with the Astros, pitched well, posted a 1.28 ERA plus on top of a 1.3 WAR with the Astros. The ERA plus is a stat. It takes a player's ERA and normalizes it across the league. It takes other accounts into factor, like era, ballparks, opponents, things like that. It adjusts it to a score of 100. That's the league average. So somebody that's, you know, for instance, Verlander was 1.28 ERA plus. He's 28% better than the league average, just to explain that, guys, to you a little bit. And we're going to have a great fantasy baseball 101 next week on Tuesday. It's going to go into some more stats so you guys understand kind of what we're talking about. Verlander, go ahead.
Yeah. So from July 1st onward, he was third in points. He had 300.5, came out to 17.7 a game, started 17 games, went 11-4. He had 10 quality starts. Quality start is six innings pitch, allowing three or fewer earned runs. Had 95 strikeouts, 30 walks. He's always been a really high strikeout guy. Allowed 10 home runs, only 32 earned runs. His 11 wins was tied with Spencer Strider for the most in baseball. And as he's getting up there in years, he's refined how he pitches. Earlier in his career, he was blowing you away with triple digit gas in the eighth inning. Now he's more into the, we'll call it, as Dan Dickerson would, the art of pitching. Rest in peace. He's always had just a filthy 12-6 curveball, and Houston's lineup isn't what it was a few years ago, but with the level of pitching that they get from Verlander and from Framber Valdez and some other jerk-offs down there, you know, they're still a pretty good team. He still gets decent run support from the bats that are there. And he's somebody who when you give him the ball every 5 days, you've got a damn good chance at seven-plus innings. He's got 10 to 15 strikeout upside on any given start. He does a pretty good job of keeping the ball in the park. And I know down there in Houston, they've got that kind of a short left porch there. But he's been fantastic.
And he's 40, or he'll be, well, he might be 41 now, but he's getting up there, still going. We'll see. I know he's listed high on a lot of people's rankings, preseason rankings so far. I don't love it this year. I'm probably going to fade him, but for the right price, I will grab him.
Hey, everybody's got a price. $1 Million Man taught us that.
All right. You want Bradish?
Yeah. Yep. So next up is Kyle Bradish from the Baltimore Orioles. This is a cat that kind of came out of nowhere. It was only his second full season in the bigs. He was fourth in points, 294 and a half, made 16 starts. His 12 quality starts in the second half was second in baseball. He allowed only 7 home runs, which was the third fewest among starting pitchers with 80 or more innings pitched in the second half. He was dominant, especially in August and September, where he went 6-1. He had a sub-1 whip. A whip is walks in hits divided by innings pitched, and that just gives you an idea of roughly how many base runners a pitcher will allow on a per-inning basis. He had a 10-plus K per nine. He allowed only 15 earned runs in 11 starts there.
Yeah, that's he did amazing. Last 20 starts of the season went 10-5 with a 2.31 ERA, 1.91 batting average against. The turning point for him was really in early June. He kind of simplified his windup a bit, and he went from more being a fastball pitcher to using his breaking balls a lot more. In 2022, he threw his four-seamer over 44% of the time and his slider at almost 30% of the time. This past season, 2023, the slider he threw 31% of the time. His four-seamer went down to half, almost 22% of the time, and he mixed in his sinker and his curveball at 17-plus each. As well. So he really started to, you know, pitch and not just blow people away. I know when he came, he's young. I think he's 26 or something still, I guess. Mm-hmm. But He joined the Orioles in April of 22. He struggled. They sent him down. He had some shoulder pain issues. He came back up. But that last half of last season was amazing. He finished fourth in AL Cy Young behind Gerrit Cole, Sonny Gray, and Kevin Gausman. Yeah. So, fine pitcher.
Yeah, we got KIP here in the chat joining us from Facebook. What's going on, brother? Appreciate the hell out of you. I can't believe I forgot to mention. Check this shit out. We got the merch, yeah. Fellas. We got
lean in a little bit. It's hard to see.
Yeah, there we go.
I got the logo on there. Hell yeah.
That's a quality item.
All right. Next pitcher off the board or on the board here. Zach Wheeler from the Philadelphia Phillies. 33 years old last season. Surpassed 200 innings. That's a nice plateau for a starting pitcher. Had a 3.61 ERA. Still solid, but is worse since 2019. Jeez, trying to think. He's been in the postseason. He was pretty good, I will say, if we're talking second half. 2.37 ERA in 19 innings, as well as a ridiculous 26-1 strikeout to walk ratio. He had a nice postseason. I wish they could have beaten the Diamondbacks, but that had probably made for a more exciting World Series.
It would have. And Zach Wheeler was kind of a late bloomer. He started out with the Mets and he was halfway decent. He went to Philly and he's really established himself as a front of the rotation guy. They do have Aaron Nola there as well. He was absolutely electric in July. 5 starts, 2-1, 39 strikeouts, 2 walks across 123 batters faced. He will give up home runs. He gave up 14 in the second half last season, which was the third most in baseball. His ERA gets up a little bit higher. He'll give up his hits. He'll give up the home runs, like I just mentioned. The East Coast stadiums, especially as we get into the dog days of summer, the end of July, August, September, and whatnot, the ball really flies out. And something not necessarily related to Wheeler or anyone we've talked about today, but it was kind of counterintuitive to me. Baseballs fly farther when the air is humid.
Humid. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. You think it's thicker and more right. Water particles to stop the, it doesn't make sense, but you'd be wrong.
But no, I mean, Zach Wheeler, he's somebody who you can draft as your, he's a low end SP1. He's a high end SP2, but you can run him out there every single week with full confidence. He's going to get you strikeouts. He doesn't walk many guys. And that's really what you look for, because you don't want the self-inflicted wounds, especially with walks.
Yeah. Since 2020, Wheeler's led all qualified starters with 19.3 wins above replacement. Thanks to that combination of, quantity, he's out there a lot. He's thrown 629 innings since 2020 and quality, that 3.06 ERA, 2.9 FIP since 2020. Definitely somebody I would be having my radar.
Yeah. And talking about FIP, that is fielding independent pitching. And so that is a measure of how well a pitcher is doing, regardless of the defense around him. It measures in baseball what's called the three true outcomes, which is walks, strikeouts, and home runs.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. All right. Next one.
All right. Apparently you're going
to. Oh, go ahead. My bad.
You sure?
No.
I didn't think so. We're headed out to the Pacific Northwest. We're going to talk about Logan Gilbert. He was 8th in points in the second half. He had 274. He was 8-2 with 10 quality starts. This dude was absolutely electric in July. He was 4-0, 5 game starts. He had his only complete game shutout of the season there. 28 strikeouts, 2 walks. And this is going to be a recurring theme that you hear us talk about, not only today, but just as we go on preparing for fantasy baseball season. You're looking for high strikeout, low walk pitchers. Now, those pitchers are going to come at a premium, but if you're smart and you pay attention, those pitchers, there's some deals that you can find. And coming into the beginning of last season, Logan Gilbert was one of those guys. He's a younger dude who's working to establish himself in the league. And last year, especially in the second half, he did it. He did give up 17 home runs and 36 earned runs, which is a bit on the high side. But he was doing that with a team who was pushing for the playoffs. And one thing you can't ignore is his home park out there in Seattle, I believe. And let me just double check this. Yes, T-Mobile Park is the most pitcher-friendly park in baseball.
Love it. Coincidentally, the Mariners and Logan Gilbert today agreed to a 1-year $4.05 million deal to avoid arbitration. I'll call it now. He is my pick for AL Cy Young Award winner this next season in 2024. Guy's got an elite fastball, 96th percentile among starters who throw four seamers. It only drops about 12.8 inches. It's just sick. He has that elite extension. He can release the ball closer to the plate. They call that perceived velocity. But then 2 years ago, he kind of developed his slider. He had a changeup that was real bad. It was shitty. And he worked on developing a splitter, and it is worked. With the fastball and the slider together, those pitches are better together than they would be on their own. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I have him on my fantasy team. Thank you, Matt. I got him in a trade for, who was that? I don't remember who it was, but not important. But fine pitcher.
Yes, he is. Last one on the list. We're headed up to Dubo country. That's right. We are talking about Pablo Lopez from the Minnesota Twinkies. He was 13th in points last year. He had 252 in the second half, averaged 16.8 per game, started 15 games. He was 7-3, had 10 quality starts, had a complete game. This dude is a strikeout pitcher. He had 108 strikeouts in the second half. ERA was a touch high, and when I say a touch high, it's not in comparison to the rest of the league, but more in comparison to some of the pitchers that we've been talking about at 3.13. He gives up hits, plain and simple. He gave up 89 hits. His whip is 1.16. He gave up 16 fewer earned runs in the second half than he did in the first half, despite allowing two more hits in the second half than the first half.
No kidding. He's kind of, he's one of those pitchers that sweeper pitch kind of came. I think it was always around. I just didn't think they had a quite name for it, but he threw that pitch quite a bit. Third most sweepers to lefties among all righty starters last year. They never hit it. They can't do when they do. They don't do any damage with it, really. Lefties made contact with a Lopez sweeper last season. They either hit it on the ground or popped it up 55% of the time. It's a small sample size. It was only 31 balls. So hardly close enough for a, conclusive reading, I guess. But they lost Sonny Gray there out of there. They lost Kenta Maeda to the Tigers. So that rotation is going to look a little bit different with Pablo Lopez. Is he the number one there?
Yes. Kind of by default, given who
that's kind of what that's why I'm like, he's got to be. So, heck yeah. I mean, that rotation was great last year. They were second in the majors with a 3.82 ERA. So we'll see what it looks like this year after losing some people. Do you guys sell those Stoned On Sports hats?
Well, sure can.
We can.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're interested in one, just shoot us an email. I don't know what the hell the price is. We'll say, what do you think is fair price? $25. We'll get it to you for. We ordered. So here's the deal.
You're the one. We ordered five. I don't know the price. Right.
We ordered five of them, just for, Kyle and I to have, and we've got to give one away to AJ, who won the podcast league. So we've got a couple more left over. Happy to sell one to you guys. And as we, as we go along. If there's more of you that are interested, I can certainly order more. They take usually a couple of weeks to get to me, and then I can ship them out for you. But yeah, if you guys want to drop us an email there, it's the hell is our email? stonedownsports1@gmail.com. We can figure out some kind of.
Yeah, we can do one of our PayPals or something like that. I think would work the easiest, safest for everyone.
Yeah, that'll work. That way you guys get buyer protection and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'll you guys are interested in that, that's cool. I'll put some info on the socials too, as well, so you'll have it and we can work that out. Heck yeah. Sweet. I haven't even got one yet, so I'm excited to get mine. But yeah.
It's not bad. Yeah, it's a trucker hat. Snapback. It's not like the foam front or anything like that. It's halfway decent. I like it. Shit, they just came yesterday. We got t-shirts too.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Where's the t-shirt? Should have hung it up in the background. God, you're failing.
Well, shut your mouth.
All right. Shut your mouth. Let's talk about football, gentlemen. I know you guys are probably excited to talk about that. We'll just go in order here for the weekend. First, what an exciting storyline with that. The Rams and the Lions game, of course, with Staff and Gofford. Brad Holmes coming from there. What'd I say?
Staff and Gofford.
Staff and Gofford. Goff and Stafford. You said Dan Dickerson was dead about 10 minutes ago, too, because you meant to say.
Oh, I meant Jim Price.
Yeah, I knew it. You got Tyreek Hill coming back to Kansas City to play a playoff game there in the frigid cold. Temperatures are expected to be very cold there. And then a couple Coach of the Year candidates, D'Amico Ryans in Houston, Stefanski there in Cleveland. And then you've got Stroud, the youngest quarterback in the league, and Flack versus Flacco, the oldest quarterback in the playoffs. So, Browns, Texans. I think we talked. We both chose the Browns. Oh, I screwed that one up. Man. We both took the Browns in our predictions on Tuesday. It's the opening game of the playoffs. These guys played a couple weeks ago. CJ Stroud was hurt for that game. They had to go with Case Keenum and Davis Mills, and the Browns won 36-22. I think the Browns take it. Flacco has the most road playoff wins ever in the wild card round with 4. I think they got it. Their offense has been extremely better with him on the field. They averaged 5.8 yards per play. All the other quarterbacks, I believe, were under 5, Watson and Walker and DTR. We'll see. Their problem is third downs. When they played in week 16, they were only 6 of 16 on third downs. But they got the greatest defense probably in the league. So I think they're definitely going to slow CJ Stroud down.
For sure. And I think the big thing is they're really going to miss Tank Dell, because Noah Brown and Robert Woods and John Metchie just have not stepped up the way they needed to help fill the loss of Tank Dell. Nico Collins has been fantastic. Devin Singletary, despite his diminutive size, he's only 5'7", something like that. He's played pretty damn well. He wrestled the job away from Damian Pierce, but I think that Cleveland defense is just going to be too much for them to overcome, even though it is at home. I think Cleveland wins this game. I think Cleveland covers really without much of an issue. I'm not going to say they're going to win by a touchdown, but I ain't sweating laying 2 points with Cleveland this week.
Yeah, I agree. I think they'll win. I think they can cover that. Cleveland has turned the ball over 12 times in Flacco's start. That's the most in the NFL in those games. Since the NFL expanded to 32 teams in 2002, teams that have won the turnover battle in the postseason have won 76.9% of the time. If you get two or more turnovers, win it by two or more, they're 95-18. So play in an elimination games like the postseason, turnovers can ruin you quick.
Yeah, they can. Somebody needs to tell Josh Allen that. Yeah, we'll get to that in a few minutes. Yeah, I mean, look, Flacco needs to take care of the ball. He led the Ravens on their run to a Super Bowl a decade ago where he would just played out of his mind. Cleveland hauled his ass off the couch, gave him a week on a practice squad, and then stuck his ass out there on the field. And he's been turning in 300-yard games pretty much every single week since then. Again, I don't see a way for the Texans to win. They're a hell of a story. CJ Stroud is a hell of a story, but you know, it's about to strike midnight and that whatever the hell the thing is going to turn into a pumpkin or some shit. However the story
Cinderella?
Goes. Yeah.
All right. Don't you can tell you never had kids because you don't know.
The Not story. That I know of.
All right, next game, Dolphins at Chiefs. Miami traveled to Kansas City in the cold there. These guys played in Germany, right?
Germany. Yep. Yeah, somewhere Germany. In Europe.
Yep. Kansas City won 21-14. They were up 21, you know, 0 at the half. So let's see. The Dolphins have really just, they were the AFC East leader, you know, the whole season really, and just tanked there at the last game there against the Bills. They can score. They're third in NFL in points per drive, second league in scoring a touchdown on 30.6% of their drives. But they're so hurt. They're so beat up defensively for sure. I think it's going to be tough for them. I think I read that they're performance in cold weather games, which is like 40 degrees or under, and it's looking to be possible single digits at Arrowhead for this game. Doesn't look good for Miami. But the Chiefs have struggled too. We'll see what they happen. They can't score in the second half. Could be a good game. We'll see.
You know, I keep going back to this. The speed of Miami. Mm-hmm. Cold has no effect on that whatsoever. Jalen Waddle has been a limited participant all week. We're looking to get him back. Raheem Mostert has been limited all week. Hopefully he comes back. Xavien Howard is out already. He is not going to be playing this week. And that's going to be.
What about Van Ginkle? Is Van Ginkle on there?
No, I don't see him.
No. Oh, interesting. All right. Maybe he's fine.
Yeah. That Kansas City offense, I don't think they have enough to really get things done. I get it. They're at home. I get it. They are the defending champions and they've got Patrick Mahomes and blah, and Travis Kelce and blah, blah, blah. And you know, hopefully I just hope that the networks show the game and not just Taylor Swift the entire fucking time.
Don't get me wrong. Hopefully I just hope.
Are you fucking with me right now?
You said hopefully.
Mr. Snaff and Gofford. I ain't trying to hear that shit.
I'm just pointing out your shit too. Yeah, no, the Swift show. I'm sure she'll have her suite there. Good for her. This will be the 12th home playoff game in the Mahomes era. They're 9-2 in those games. Both losses came in overtime. Miami was 4-3 on the road this season. But Miami's 1-5 as an underdog. They couldn't really beat good teams. They did most of their damage against poor teams. But I still have them winning against the Chiefs this weekend.
I agree. I think the game's going to go under the total of 43.5. excuse me, just the speed is too damn much. Miami has four of the five fastest players in the league with Achan and Waddle and Tyreek Hill and Raheem Mostert. I think it's going to be a fun game to watch. I'm not a huge Mahomes guy. I'm not a huge Kelce guy. Rashee Rice has done a hell of a job, especially as a rookie, but I don't know. I don't see them having the horses to get it done here in the postseason.
Yeah. What's up, Blue Yays? Thanks for joining, man. I got to thinking today when you were, I did a bunch of last minute wild card research because I know you asked about it on Tuesday and I hope you weren't sad about that, but we actually kind of did do an expanded preview here than more than I thought we were going to do, but it's for you, man.
What's up, Blue?
Yep. Thanks for joining. What do we got? Steelers at Bills next. Bam.
That game.
Bills favored by 9.5, total 35.5, which that's going to be played in some inclement weather. I think the total started at 40.5 earlier in the week and it's plummeted to 35.5. Buffalo's been on a tear. What they win their final five games of the season, took the AFC East title away from the Dolphins, where they really made their final push there in the final few games was on defense. They allowed that 37 points to the Eagles in week 12. They've allowed 22 or fewer those final five games. Buffalo's on a tear. Watch out for them. I don't think Pittsburgh's quarterback situation is going to be enough to beat the Bills.
No, they're supposed to get some snow there in Buffalo in January, to the surprise of nobody. The Steelers with Rudolph, the red-nosed quarterback, he's going to try and lead them to victory, but I just do not see that happening. Looks like Gabe Davis is not going to play. He's got a knee injury. He's not practiced yesterday or today. And I think I saw that Stephon Diggs had come out today in an interview saying how he needs to step up. But if they're getting a shit ton of snow and all that, I can't imagine them throwing the ball around a whole hell of a lot. I know TJ Watt is likely not going to play as well. As a matter of fact, he's out. And that's really going to hurt that defense. I can't envision a scenario where Pittsburgh goes up to Buffalo and wins. I don't think they're going to be able to score enough points to do so. I don't even know if they can cover the 9.5, honestly. This is going to be, you know, we've got the total at 35.5. This is another game, just kind of depending on the weather. And I know we're a couple days out. Yeah, I mean, this total may continue to plummet downward, just the same as you know, what may happen there with the Chiefs game because of the cold. The Bills are used to it. I mean, it's not like the Steelers are playing, you know, usually in Miami. They're used to the cold. They're used to the wind and all that shit in the winter, but they don't have enough to do it.
No. Yeah, the Steelers, they only average 5 yards per play on offense, 22nd in the league. Scored a touchdown on only 14.9% of their drives, 28th in the league. And you add in the expected weather. I just don't see it. I think the Bills win comfortably. And I was wrong earlier. The point total started at 43 and has since plummeted to 35.5 due to this storm that's going to affect half of America. Interesting. And you know, the Steelers, you know, I didn't think they were going to make it either. They had those losses to New England and Arizona that were home games. They got dusted in Indianapolis. And then they had a 3-game winning streak, got some luck there in the final week and got in. So
what does that say about Kenny Pickett that he's listed first on the depth chart, but Mason Rudolph is starting?
Yeah. I don't know. ESPN didn't change their shit. Is that the simple explanation for it? Or whatever site you're using for that matter? I don't know.
No, I mean, this is coming from Tomlin. It has nothing to do with a website.
I'm talking about ESPN hasn't changed it to say Mason Rudolph is the head of the depth chart for QBs.
That's because he's not the top of the depth chart.
Well, he should.
Kenny Pickett is still.
He's been starting. Kenny Pickett hasn't fucking played. I don't know how he can be a top of depth chart if you're not playing.
That's you're killing me. Just move on to the next fucking game.
Packers, Cowboys. Fuck you, Matt. Dallas still the only undefeated team at home. They outscored opponents by 21.5 points per game at home. But this offense for the Packers, I think it could be challenging for the Cowboys to stop at least all the time. What is it? 1-7? I don't know. I think this game is going to be closer than people think.
Right now, people think it's going to be a touchdown game. Total sitting at 50.5. Do I think the Packers have a chance to go down there and win? Sure. I mean, it's not a great chance, but, you know, the opportunity is there. Jordan Love has exceeded pretty much everybody's expectations this year. They've got a fantastic young receiving core there. Just kind of looking over the injury report for them, you know, Romeo Dubs was limited. A.J. Dillon hasn't practiced all week. Aaron Jones has been limited. So they're a team that's definitely beat up. Christian Watson has been limited all week. So if they can get him back, that's going to be a big help, especially with Stephon Gilmore dealing with some nagging injuries. But the Cowboys are just a different team at home than they are on the road. They've not lost a game. They score a shit ton of points. Jair Alexander is dealing with some injuries as well, and they need him out there on the field and it just blanketed on CeeDee Lamb if there's any kind Giants. I think that they're going to come, but I think the Cowboys win by six, so they cover. I think is a predict to easier with a nine.
All right, cool. I think my internet doesn't work, so if anybody can hear me.
No, we're just ignoring you.
I mean, your phone, your screen's frozen, and everything you just said was a robot. So I don't know if it was you or me, but probably me. It's going to, whoever's winning at half is going to win this game. Dallas is 11-1 when leading at half and 1-4 when trailing at the break. Conversely, the Packers are 1-6 when trailing at the half and 7-2 when leading at halftime. So we'll see how it goes. Now, the game we're most, oh, we got some comments here. Nope. Blue Jay said it's Matt's. Matt had the bad internet. Thanks, man, for clearing that up. Appreciate that.
Apparently, he's the final arbiter of it. Although yep. I do like this here. Bills Lions Super Bowl. I'll accept that. Lions will be on top, and the Bills will be 0-5 in Super Bowls. and they'll get none for the thumb.
Right. All right. Rams Lions. Speaking of the game that we're most excited about personally, they put it on Sunday night. I think that was an excellent choice as well. Again, we talked about the attachment there with the Rams and Lions. First playoff game in Detroit since 1993. The Lions have not won a playoff game since 2 years before that in 1991. This has the highest game total on the slate, 51.5 points. Lions favored by 3. They entered the season with tangible expectations, and I think the Lions have lived up to them so far. I love them in this game. I know it's going to be tough. James Houston being back. We got CeeDee Deuce back. The Lions were, fourth at 6.2 yards per play at home. But the Rams are tough. We'll see what Sean McVay can figure out.
Dude, I'm fucking terrified.
I know. Brutal. I know. I'm not trying to be terrified, but
it, like, this is the NFL writers, like, just, this is their dream scenario. Stafford comes back home. He was traded for Goff, and now they're going up against the Lions in Detroit in the playoffs. And the Rams are a team that really surprised a lot of people. I know when we were going through and doing our division previews damn near 8 months ago, we were looking at their defense and just, you know, who in the hell are these players that the Rams are running out there aside from Aaron Donald? And just over the course of the season, they've improved little by little. The Lions, they finished last year 9-8. They had, up and down for parts of the seasons. They got their dicks knocked in the dirt going against Baltimore. For this game, I'm definitely betting the over. I've been telling my neighbor since last season, when the Lions are at home, bet the put up a ton of points. They're going to be without Laporta, barring some kind of act of God. But with a healthy ARSB, you've got Gibbs and Monty in the backfield. Hopefully J-Mo is back too. Let me just pull up this practice report and see if he ain't even on here. There he is. He's full participant yesterday and today. So I think we're going to be good to go. With the spread at 3, I think I'm just going to leave that one alone because I think this game will be that close. And like I said, I think I'll bet the over. I wouldn't be surprised if this was a 31-28 kind of game.
Yeah. Blue says Sun God, 2 touchdowns. Hey, I like it. I hope it.
Yep,
did you guys all see he dyed his hair Honolulu blue? Looks sweet. I can't wait for Sunday night. It's going to be great. For the Rams, man, getting their offense healthy was really the catalyst to for them jumping out and playing, because they started 3-6 heading into their week 10 bye and won 6 out of their last 8 games. But with everybody healthy, Stafford, Kyron Williams, Cooper Kupp, and Puka Nacua on the field, the Rams averaged 6.8 yards per play. That's excellent. To put that in some context, the 49ers with all their playmakers, Purdy, McCaffrey, Debo Samuel, Ayuk, and George Kittle on the field, they averaged 7.3 yards per play. So that half a yard difference. I'm scared, like you said, frightened a little bit because of the Lions defense. The secondary is not so good, but They got some playmakers. That Melifonwu has been doing stuff. Iffy, CJGJ. I just pray. I'll be sitting on the edge of the couch, just praying.
Yeah, we got Dewan in here. Just remember, he said the Lions will be in the Super Bowl in the beginning. We got this.
That's I it, do brother. Remember that. I do remember that.
Keep your head up. We're sticking with it. The Lions are going to be out in Vegas here in the beginning of February playing for all the marbles.
Yep. Okay. Let's see. Last one, the Monday night game. Not sure why the league put this game on for Monday night. Eagles, Bucks. Not sure. Philadelphia is favored -3 as a road favorite. Totals 44. Listen, the Eagles were 10-1, riding high. Everything was going good. They had three straight wins against the Cowboys, the Chiefs, the Bills, and they have just fucking deteriorated since. Period. They've collapsed, turning the ball over. Their defense just hasn't what it has not been consistent as their 2022 squad. I think they're going to get bounced. I think the Bucs beat them.
I think there's a damn good chance. And here's something. So if you think back to early February of 2018, a Matt Patricia-led defense gave up 41 points to the Eagles. The Lions said, hey, I want some of that.
Yeah.
And so they hire Matt Patricia, and he comes to Detroit and just shits all over him shoes. And then he leaves. And then he ends up in Philly. And Nick Sirianni says, I saw 2018. I saw what he did with the Lions. You know what? I want this dude to call plays for my defense. And right. Since he started calling plays for the defense, they're giving up over 20 game. What the wrong with him? He doesn't have the benefit of Belichick there anymore. I mean, Nick Sirianni's a solid coach, and I know there's a little bit of smoke saying, hey, you know, if the Eagles lose this game, maybe he gets clipped. And it's tough to replace both of your coordinators. Completely understand that. I would not be shocked if Philly goes down there and loses. I have a hard time understanding why exactly they are 3-point favorites. I'm okay with them being a favorite, maybe a point and a half, but by a field goal, no, absolutely not. This defense has gone downhill, like I said, ever since Patricia has taken over. I'm looking for a big game out of Rashad White. I think he goes for over 100 total yards. He probably scores. I don't see any way that the Philly secondary is going to be able to stop Mike Evans. I think Godwin has a game. Think about prior to the season when we were talking about the Bucs possibly being one of the worst teams in the league, and now here they are, division champions, mm-hmm. with a very good shot to win on Wild Card Weekend.
I sure do. And the Eagles went to Tampa Bay in Week 3, won 25-11. Different Eagles team now. The Bucs were definitely, like you said, one of the biggest surprises of the season, winning their third consecutive NFC South title. I like them for an upset in this game, and I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, for sure. They got they're looking at potential rainstorms there, so another outdoor game this week with some weather concerns. The total's the second lowest total of the opening round at that 43.5 there. I've seen it on some other sites. So something to follow headed into Monday night. Heck yeah. I'm excited. Oh, Lions. God, I can't wait.
See, Dubo agrees. Eagles are going to collapse under the pressure. Yes, they are, Dubo. Yes, they Excellent. Are.
All right. That wraps up the wild card preview. Guys, got any questions, any good bets you want to recognize? We're going to get into our Facebook. I did it again. Fantasy Baseball 101. Tonight, we're going to talk about league types. Specifically, there's the rotisserie leagues versus points leagues, which we prefer. They're kind of on the rise. The league we're going to do actually for the podcast league here will be points based. And then we'll talk about the head-to-head roto as well. God, it's a sexy woman.
Yes, she is.
So yes, she is. Why don't you start talking about just standard rotisserie leagues?
So a rotisserie league is, number one, it's a league that does not have playoffs. You'll have your 10 teams, 12 teams. A lot of times they'll go like for the NFBC, it'll be a 15 team. And it's all based on categories. Usually it's 5x5, meaning there are 5 hitting categories, hits, runs, home runs, and stolen. And you'll have 5 pitching categories. That would be wins, ERA, whip, strikeouts, and saves. And all you're doing through the season is accumulating stats in every one of those categories. And you might think to yourself, damn, that's going to be pretty easy. I'm sure I can put together a team that can do that. Well, not so much. Generally, you're going to want to punt a category or two. In years past, typically it was stolen bases just because the number of stolen bases was down so much. You know, you would look at early 90s even, and it seemed like everybody had 20 stolen bases, and just, you know, the game evolves and strategies shift and steals kind of went away. Well, baseball changed some rules. They got a bigger base now, and you can't throw over as much or as unlimited numbers as you have in the past. And so we're seeing a rise in stolen bases. I think those kind of leagues, especially if you get off to a slower start, are easier to come back in because really? Because you're not relying on another team having to lose a matchup for you to ground. You are doing fantastic, if you're, you know, leading your league in home runs, you've already banked those stats. So maybe you trade a power hitter to a team who has a surplus of stolen bases, or maybe you try and acquire some strikeouts on the pitching side. You know, there's ways you can maneuver and strategize throughout the season and manipulate your lineup and your overall roster to try and make those holes.
Yeah, I'd say the biggest plus to the Roto leagues is it gives you a deeper knowledge of the game. You have to pay attention a little bit more than just your standard home run and home run hitters and strikeout pitchers. You'll need to know like some of those bottom of the order guys who are going to steal a handful of bases every year, what middle relievers are going to give you consistent innings of low ERA and whip. The drawback, I just, like you kind of mentioned, I feel like by the All-Star break rolls around in those leagues, you kind of know if you have a chance to win or not. And since there's no playoff to finish the year, there's no way for like the sixth team in the league to get hot, run the table and win a championship. That's the disadvantage of that league, or I won't say disadvantage, I'll say drawback of the Roto leagues.
Sure. It makes sense.
So then we have points leagues. The head-to-head, they're easy to understand. You know, they're like fantasy football, like that we play. You draft a team, your players score points based on their performances. A single's worth a point, a win's worth a point, or 10, or whatever your team sets that, or your league sets that up. Whoever has the most points at the end of the period wins that week. So best records get into the playoffs, just like fantasy baseball, or fantasy football, I should say. In short, it's fantasy football with baseball players, you know, basically. The biggest plus I like, the ability to talk trash to your opponent. Anybody who I'm going up, especially if it's a close buddy like Matt or some of my other friends, you know, you get that little trash talk component. You know, you can make fun of their inability to draft their team, the weight of their parents, you know, whatever you want to say, you know. biggest drawback, I guess it still relies on inconsistent head-to-head scoring, meaning you have plenty of weeks when you finish in the top three in scoring, you have 200 points and you still lose. That I'm sure that's happened to you guys in fantasy baseball. You score 200, that usually assures you a win every week, but your opponent went off for 220 that week and beat you. So that can be a little sucky. Why I think it's preferred by a lot, just because the level of understanding needing to play in the head-to-head league isn't, you know, encyclopedic. If you know a lot of the big hitters, big power pitchers, you have a decent chance to field a good team. Heck yeah.
Yeah, and then you've got head-to-head categories. And it kind of combines the two. where instead of drafting to score points, you're drafting statistics, but you still have a head-to-head matchup every week. And so that same 5x5 scoring that I talked about earlier is just down 7 day. So if you have more home runs, more RBIs, more strikeouts, saves, et cetera, basically what you're trying to do is win more categories than your opponent. I played in leagues like that before. That was a fantasy baseball league with daily moves. And as we mentioned earlier in the show, that shit is such a grind. Mm-hmm. But if you have 5-10 minutes in the morning when you're sitting on the can to take a look at waivers and check out who's being called up, you can make it work. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, I enjoy fantasy baseball. I'm happy to play in any kind of league, any kind of daily moves, weekly moves, you know, moves on Monday and Friday. I don't give two shits. There's a league and there's money to win. I want to play.
Yeah. Heck yeah. Love it. So yeah, fantasy baseball 101 this week.
Yes, sir.
Telling you the differences. Since you guys, like I said, since you guys are interested, we want to spend a lot of our time educating you guys too on some of this stuff for you, those that don't know a lot of it. I know a lot of you guys have commented that, you know, you're interested in getting back into it, haven't played it before or haven't played it in quite a long time. Like I said, it could be just as fun as fantasy football. I think we're going to have a great season. So,
yeah. Can't wait.
What do we got on tap for Tuesday? I know we'll recap Wildcard Weekend, of course. Our fantasy baseball 101 topic is going to be stats. You know, how to understand them, which sites to use for that are going to give you the best options and things, whether it's Fangraphs or Baseball Reference or local CBS, your league CBS, the scoring is there as well. But we're going to talk about, we try to put the stats in these as we talk in these podcasts and tell you a little bit about them. But we wanted to dive into some more of them so you have a better understanding of that stuff going forward. And then I believe we are going to talk about some prospects Tuesday. So a lot of fantasy baseball too is monitoring the minor leagues, guys that might be getting called up this season, or a chance to get called up, or a late season call up, somebody that might help you get on your team and win you some weeks. I stumbled through that pretty good.
That's all right. I like how you asked the question, what are we going to talk about Tuesday? And then you immediately answered it.
Well, I pulled up the sheet. I pulled up the sheet as I was saying that. So
all good, brother.
Blue Jay, Jack Peterson. Where's he go?
That's a very good question. He's somebody who's
kind of bat. So,
yep, he'll give you some power from the left hand side. He is a platoon type guy. He does not hit left handed pitching well. He's not somebody who I've dug really, really deep into yet. But I think, I don't know, let me just pull up a bullshit website here and parrot what they say. Yeah. Okay. According to MLB trade rumors, there's a good chance, you know, he might be a target for the Nationals. They could use some left-handed power. I'll go ahead and just take that as the gospel because you caught me off guard there, Blue Jays.
Yeah. All right. I think that does it. You want to take a seat?
Sure thing. Real quick from Dewan. Great show, fellas. Peace out. We appreciate you stopping by. Same to you, Blue Jays, and Dubo, and Captain Spock, and Kip. We always enjoy hanging out with you guys. We enjoy the conversation. Dubo, definitely I'll reset my router after this. Thank you for pointing that out. on behalf of Kyle, it's been a lot of fun. Good luck to you guys with your sports investments and bets this weekend. If any of you are in, playoff leagues or anything like that, I know I'll be looking to make a little coin.
Definitely.
You know what? Let's have a little fun. We got that storm coming through. Just keep your asses safe. That way Absolutely. You can come back and watch on Tuesday. So take it easy, everyone. We will talk to you next week.